On today's show, we're diving deep into the everyday practical use case of AI. I have an amazing AI expert, Dan Shipper. Dan hosts a podcast where he talks to everyone from all walks of business on how they use ChatGPT. So you know, we're going to break down some of the best ChatGPT use cases. We're going to talk to Dan about how he uses AI in his business every, and we're going to break down what the different large language models are best at and how you should think about using them. It's an action-packed show. Let's get into today's episode. Before we get into today's show, let me tell you about HubSpot. Finding a service solution that helps you keep your customers happy can feel impossible. Like, try to remember the name of that guy you literally just met at the networking event. HubSpot's all-new Service Hub can help. It brings together service and success together on one platform with AI-powered help desk and chatbots to handle your frontline support tickets, so you can scale support and drive retention and revenue. Visit HubSpot.com/service to learn more. Welcome to Marketing Against the Grain. I'm your co-host, Kip Bodner, CMO at HubSpot. I'm flying solo with my guest, Dan Shipper, today. Kieran Flanagan could not join us. He is on new dad duty and we'll be back on an upcoming episode. I'm so excited to welcome Dan to the pod.
Let's do it. I'm excited.
Dan, thanks so much for joining us on Marketing Against the Grain today. I'd love if you could explain to everybody what you're working on right now. It's called Every, but like, what the heck is it? Like, give everybody the background.
Well, thanks so much for having me. So Every is a daily newsletter. We publish long form essays about business, technology, and the examined life. So every day you get a really great high quality essay that's sort of like the stuff that you get on Substack or Medium, but we have an editor. It's highly curated. We care a lot about the craft of writing. We care a lot about writing things that are really useful for people who are building in technology. I specifically write a column for Every called Chain of Thought, where I cover AI stuff. I sort of drill into ChatGPT and specifically thinking about ChatGPT and other sort of chat models for creativity, for thinking, for personal productivity, for personal development, for understanding yourself, all that kind of stuff. So that's the like core of Every. We have a bunch of writers who work with us. And then I have a podcast, it's called How Do You Use ChatGPT, where I talk to really smart people about how they use ChatGPT. And we even go like over the shoulder where you can watch someone use it or see their historical chats. And we've done that with everyone from the economist Tyler Cowen to Reid Hoffman, the co-founder of LinkedIn, to film directors, to writers. So it's a really, really fun way for people to get ideas about how to use AI in their work and in their life. We also run courses.
Cool.
So I run a course called Maximize Your Mind with ChatGPT that I run with a clinical psychologist, Dr. Gina Gorlin. So that's another part of the Every business. And then we have a consultancy where we work with companies to help them implement AI. And we also incubate software products. So there's a lot of stuff going on and happy to dive into any part of the business you want to talk about.
You've got a modern media empire going on, which is a topic I love. We've got something similar going at HubSpot with The Hustle and all of our properties. One of the reasons I was really excited to talk with you today is I was at South by Southwest a couple months ago, and it was a very interesting climate where like there was a real tension between the creatives and the kind of what I'd call AI optimists, people who are really interested in AI, positive about AI, versus the music, the film, the graphic design, those folks. Like Peter Deng, who runs ChatGPT at OpenAI, got massively booed because there was just like this very anti-AI sentiment at this event. But what's interesting to me is like you are living at the intersection of those two worlds.
Yeah.
Like you care very much about the craft of writing and creativity and all the things that those folks care about, but you also are a huge AI optimist and proponent. So like, can you just explain for us why and like help decode this like confusing thing for me and maybe everybody listening today?
It's a great question. I mean, I think that it's totally legit for people to be worried about it and to be afraid and to ask tough questions about how it will affect their jobs or how it will affect art or creativity going forward. I think for me, fundamentally, I'm just curious about this stuff. It's like, it just lights me up. I'm just like, holy shit, this is amazing. Like I have magic powers, right? Like now I can build an app. I can make a film. I can like draw something, like all this stuff that like I might've had ambitions to do before, but maybe not all of the skills or maybe not all of the resources to do. And so I feel like a kid in a candy store and I just like can't help myself. But I think also when I think about how to deal with like new technologies, what's the most interesting question for me is not what does this destroy, but like what opportunities does it create for us to make things that we couldn't make before?
Print that on
a
t-shirt.
There's tons and tons of opportunities. And the fact that people are afraid of it and that there's a little bit of like a stigma to using it actually increases my belief that there are opportunities, because it means that fewer people are going to be like going there and like finding the low-hanging fruit. And I think anytime there are new technology revolutions, there is the ability to create foundational works of art and creativity with those tools that sort of define that genre and that era of creativity. You know, there's a reason we still watch like Hitchcock films.
Yeah.
He's like defining that era of filmmaking, which hadn't really been done before. And so that makes me kind of excited to be playing in this arena.
Yeah. So it almost strikes me that the exclusivity of making things is going way down, because you get access. You just said, it's like, oh, wow, I have magical powers. I can do things that I couldn't before. So if you were this highly specialized person who could do those things, I can totally understand why you might be scared, concerned, frustrated, different things. Because you're like, wait a second, what makes me special in the world is changing in some way. And I think you and I are here as optimists, basically being like, oh, we think that change is really positive because it opens up the world to make and create way more things, way better things, and do more first-time things, blaze new trails, which I think is really valuable in all this, which is great. My follow-up question to you is like, what is the thing that happened to you that gave you conviction? Because there's a lot of people listening out there that are like still kind of skeptical, still kind of worried. Like, what was the moment where you're like, oh, okay, I got to go and I have to really do this?
I think it was really at the very beginning of like sort of GPT-3 era AI. I just started seeing people tweeting about it. And at the time, me and my co-founder, you know, we've always like thought about like incubating software apps. We've, you know, built a lot of things like that in the past. And at the time, he was interested in incubating like a Google Docs replacement. Mm-hmm. And so he was sort of building that on nights and weekends. And we were kind of like, you know, it'd be really interesting if you just like put this GPT-3 thing in there. And when we did that, like, you know, pressing a button and having it write something for you was like, holy shit, I cannot believe that it's doing that, right?
You're like, it is a literal AI, like, magic trick right now.
It's crazy. It's totally crazy. And we eventually launched that. It's now spun out. It's its own company. Nathan is running that as the founder, which is really great. But I think that that moment was like a big light bulb of like, wow, this could be like really, really cool for creative work. And it also is really interesting to like be on this ride from that point, because I've had so many of these like up and down moments of like when you first see it writing, you're like, oh my God, it's going to totally replace me. And then you like really look at its writing and you're like, this isn't that good. And then you're like, no, actually, but there's all these like little micro skills or micro tasks that I can have it do that now I'm like way more efficient than I would be before, or it can like help me do things that I might not have been able to do at all, but it's not going to totally replace me. And so I've been through all the like emotional ups and downs, and I kind of feel like I know the ride that other people are on. I'm just like a little bit further ahead, and probably I'm like just maybe a little bit more like techno optimist or whatever, where I feel like I can take advantage of this and do fun things with it. And that makes me like more excited than afraid.
Same here on the techno optimist side. So if you guys are looking for two people who are not that, this is not the show for you. But it's cool to play with something and learn something and be optimistic about it. But like, you're running a business, like, and that business is about writing and content. And I want to know, we're going to get into the ChatGPT stuff and how to use ChatGPT soon. But I want to know, like, how has it changed how you make what you make? You're making a daily newsletter with a team of writers. Like, how does AI made that better?
Tons of ways. So I can take you through every part of my process and also the process of other people at every. And it has like really changed every part of that process. So if you want to start with like the beginning of the writing process, which is just ideating, it's like finding interesting ideas, right? I think AI is like incredibly good for, you know, I go take a walk and I just like blab about whatever's on my mind. And I have Whisper, which is from OpenAI, and it will transcribe everything that I'm saying.
And that's transcribing it into the ChatGPT app.
You can do that. You can do it into ChatGPT. I also, what I will often do is just take it, use it, do it a voice memo.
Okay.
Because sometimes the ChatGPT app crashes, and if you have a particularly long ramble, you don't want to like lose your work.
Yeah.
But yeah, then I transcribe it, then I throw it into ChatGPT. And when I throw it into ChatGPT, like it's incredibly good at just like doing a bullet point summary of like, here are the things that you talked about, or here are the interesting things, like that kind of stuff, which is really helpful for me to like find stuff that I want to write about.
So step one is it like it takes the nuggets out of like the kind of stream of consciousness you're giving it, right? Like, hey, I'm just clearing my mind, dumping all this stuff, and it's giving me kind of my own insights back to me.
Yes, yes. Okay. And then another part of that process, which is more in the ideation process, is like, I think it's an incredible reading companion. If you want to write good stuff, you have to be reading good stuff. You have to be running into ideas all the time.
Yes.
And there's so many books and things like, I love Wittgenstein, like, you know, 1950s era philosopher. His writing is incredibly dense and hard to read. And I've always kind of felt like, okay, maybe I need to go back to like a graduate level philosophy course and like take it in school, but I don't really want to do that. And I can now just like go read Wittgenstein's Tractatus and take a picture of a passage that I'm like unfamiliar with and then have it explain it to me like a college level or a PhD level professor would. And that's really amazing, right? Like,
it's incredible, actually.
It's crazy.
Like, it's such a simple use case. You don't think about it, right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And I think one, just as a curious person, that's like so fun. But two, I can write things that I wouldn't be able to write before because I can have ideas explained to me that I wouldn't have access to. And that's like so important without having to go take a class or whatever. And, you know, a really simple example is when I interviewed Reid Hoffman, he almost was a philosophy professor and he loves Wittgenstein. So like, in order to prepare for that interview, I was just like poring over Wittgenstein with ChatGPT. And like, I did a much better job than I would have ordinarily. Yeah. So that's sort of like the ideation phase. And then the next phase for me is like, often when I'm writing something, I will have like a running document of notes where I'm just like throwing stuff in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what it's going to be about, but it's all in this mishmash of things, of ideas, quotes, sources, like whatever, little sentences that I like. And what I'll often do is I'll just like take that and throw it into ChatGPT and be like, can you find a structure here? Can you like find an outline? And it's like really good at doing that, which is great because I think that's one of the hardest things is like, especially for pieces that are really important that you've been working on for a while, figuring out what the structure is like really hard. And often you have to start there. And ChatGPT is really good at finding the like really simple structure that's been like hidden in there that you just couldn't see because you're like too stuck in the weeds. And it has like taken things that, you know, it would have taken me such a long time to like find the right way to write this piece. And it's just like, here it is. That's the structure. And then I can just start writing, which is amazing.
The kind of almost inverse use case that I do is like, you know how you're writing something sometimes and you're just like, you get in love with like a line or an idea that's in there and you're like, oh, this is so good. But then you're like, I don't know if this actually goes here in this thing. I'll often like ask and be like, does this actually go with the rest of this, or should I parking lot this and like keep it, but like use it for something else? And I found that that just makes whatever I'm working on so much better because either helps me reframe it or it's like, no, get that. Like one of the things Kieran and I talk a lot about on the show is that AI is a very good editor.
Yeah.
Especially because it doesn't have the emotional connection to what you've been writing in the way you do that can like help give you that clarity.
100%. Yeah. And I think like we'll get to editing in a second, but I think it's really great for that. I think like when I'm in the writing process, so for you, maybe it's like, it's helping you figure out, yeah, is this sentence right? Another thing that it's really helpful for in the writing process is helping you figure out what you're trying to say or what you actually think. So an example is I was writing a piece maybe like 5 months ago and I needed the right simile. And so I just like asked ChatGPT like, okay, here's what I'm trying to express. Here's my idea for a simile. And then I was like, come up with more options. And it came up with options, but I realized that the simile that I was making was like the wrong kind of simile. Like it didn't fully express the idea I was trying to express. And I was like, actually, that's not the right thing. And I was like, can you do a simile in this new way? And so like just being able to chat with it, it can come up with ideas. And sometimes the ideas are gold. And that's like really awesome. But also being able to talk to it, you sometimes realize what it is you're actually trying to say, or sometimes it'll point it out to you. And I think that's really, really helpful because like, it's really helpful to also talk to writers or editors. Like we have a lot of those people at Every, and I love that, but they're not always available at like 2 a.m. when I'm like trying to figure out a piece on a deadline. And so that is like super awesome too, is just having that always available partner that can help you figure out what you're trying to say.
And it's a partner that's like, it's not distracted working on its own thing that's on a deadline for. It's like it's kind of there at the expressed purpose of like helping it.
Yeah, 100%.
So you kind of went through ideation, thought organization, kind of the editing and crafting of an article. Anything else that you all are doing in terms of like creating a daily newsletter, daily long form with AI?
A ton of things. So what I find is that as an editorial organization, I think probably HubSpot is similar, and there's just every company has these kinds of tasks. There's some core amount of creative work that we're doing, and then we are translating that work from the original form it's in into lots of other forms. So an example might be, we have to take an article and turn it into a headline for that article. Or another example might be, we need to take an article and turn it into a summary for, we send out a digest email every Sunday. We need to turn it into a summary for that. Another one is, take an article and turn it into a tweet.
Yep.
Another one is, take a podcast and turn it into an article or turn it into show notes. And all of these are like fundamentally summarization tasks, but they're hard to do well. Like they require taste and expertise and experience, and you have to have the tone and personality of the publication or of the writer to do it. And we use ghostwriters for that. And those ghostwriters are amazing. They're hard to find, they're hard to train, and it's hard to get it right all the time. And for them, it's a little bit of like a drudgery task a lot. Yeah. Like it's sort of
it's not exciting work.
Yeah, no one really wants to do that much, at least not over and over again. And what I've found recently is Claude is actually a good enough writer to basically get like 70% of the way there for any kind of task like that. And so I built us this internal tool called Spiral. And how the tool works is if there's any kind of task like that where you're taking an input and turning it into an output reliably, it helps you build a prompt that just works for that kind of conversion task. So if I want to convert an article into a headline, for example, I can create a spiral and I give it a bunch of articles with their headlines and say, this is an article and this is the headline and that was good. These are good examples. It will pull out the patterns in those examples and then it will create a spiral that anyone can use and I can share with the team and they can just paste an article in there and it'll come up with a bunch of headline ideas. Same thing for like podcast transcripts to tweets or, you know, so we have this like library of spirals now. And the kind of amazing thing is for those writers, it sort of starts them at like 70%. So they, instead of doing the like facing the blank page and like, you know, figuring out, okay, like what's the main idea of this podcast and how do I turn it into an article? They are starting with an article that's like pretty good and they can spend their time like really polishing it and really taking it to the next level or doing like net new creative tasks. And I think organizationally, the like really incredible thing about it is it helps us imbue our taste and voice into every part of the organization without necessarily having to retrain people because it's all legible inside of the spiral, right? Like the spiral pulls out patterns and the examples we give it. We can always change those patterns or change those examples. And everybody has access to that whenever they need to make something. And I think that's really, really cool. And it's definitely changed how we make things.
And so for anybody watching, it's really like if you have a repetitive task that you know you're always going to do, in this case, it's summarizing content for you. If you can find a way for AI to do any part of it, even if it does 30% of it versus 70% like Spiral, like that's hugely valuable because it's saving you a bunch of time, especially time from folks who really don't want to do it. And the work can be kind of inconsistent or you might be in between people or those types of challenges, right? And that's pretty remarkable. Like I was just thinking, I was like, oh, you know what I want to do is like, I want to get a group of my team together and just take like a day or a week and be like, let's go through all the work we do and the like, why can't we do that with AI, right? Like, is there a reason we can't do this thing with AI? Okay. But if not, like, how do we build some lightweight prompts or workflows to basically at least do part of it with AI? And that's like one of the big inspirations to me in this conversation with you is like, AI is going to get 10, 100x better over the next few years, but it's still good enough today to do a lot.
Yeah. And I think also if you're using it today, you will be much better positioned to use it well tomorrow.
Yes.
And I think that's really important. And I think there's this weird trade-off, right? Like if you are doing your job and you have a limited amount of time in the day and you have a choice between like doing the job in the way that you know how, where you know it will go well and you know you won't waste time versus like using an AI tool, you're probably going to just like pick just doing your job so that you can like actually get the work done. And I think it's really important for people, maybe people individually or maybe companies, to like give themselves permission and space to just like mess around with this stuff.
Yes.
Because like you said, like if you just take a day and you're like, we're off the daily publishing grind, it doesn't matter if this doesn't work. Like all I want you to do is like play around with this. I think it's very likely for people to get to those wow moments where they're like, oh my God, I didn't even realize I could do it with this. And then there's like all these possibilities going off in their head that they wouldn't have run into otherwise, but they just need some space to get curious and creative that is like sort of risk-free.
So you got to get out of the grind. And they got to get out of going like, hey, I'm doing this high stakes thing and I can't afford AI to mess it up for me. So I'm just going to like keep doing it the way I've always done it, right? Which is the mindset. Then you wake up 3 years from now and you've never really adopted AI and the whole world is going to start moving you by because AI is going to be the thing that facilitates how we all work and get more productive.
Totally. And I think a way to think about this, I think the best sort of mental model for it is in a lot of ways, the way that creative work is changing is we're going from sort of sculpting to gardening.
Oh, so, I like this.
Yeah. If you're a sculptor, every single thing that happens in the transforming a block of marble to, you know, the David or whatever, you're doing that with your chisel. If you don't have a team of assistants, but you're doing that with your chisel, right? It's like you have control over every little thing. And that's how creative work has been for a long time. But now that we're sort of becoming model managers, we are moving to a world where a lot of what we're doing, especially at the start, is gardening, where a gardener isn't like creating every petal on the flowers or every part of the tree or every part of the shrub, right? What the gardener does is the gardener sets up the conditions for a seed to grow into a plant. So you're paying attention to like, what's the soil like? Does it have enough light? How much water is there? All that kind of stuff. And so model managers are like, what you have to become good at is creating the right conditions for the AI to do the work, get that like first draft. And then what you can do is you can go back into sculptor mode and be like, okay, now I want to like get all the fine details right. But I think that's a bit of a different like mindset for people that they have to get used to. And it's actually a lot more like managing a person. So the more you can think of yourself as like having hired an intern that's sometimes brilliant and sometimes not, and you have to get used to like what the intern is good at and they get upgrades like every 6 months, the more successful I think you'll be.
Okay. I love the sculptor versus gardener metaphor, but I have to ask, have you seen the AI sculptor thing going around today?
I haven't, no.
All right, hold on. I gotta show you this. This is a total detour. But so Stripe had their big event this week.
Yeah.
And they unveiled this big marble statue.
I did see that. I did see
event.
That. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Sheel, who's a VC on Twitter here, I'm going to butcher his last name, Mohanat, basically said that that statue was carved by Monumental Labs, which is an AI robotic sculpture. And here's the video of it. You can get a marble life-size bust for $6,000, a life-size figure for $32,000, or a monumental figure for $95,000. And I proceeded to Slack Kieran and I was like, Kieran, once we get to 100,000 YouTube subscribers, we are going to get a marble bust of the show made in the background of one or both of us. But I like, you just brought that metaphor up and I was like, this, he has to see this if he hasn't. It's pretty incredible.
I love that. You know, it's marble busts for everyone and democratizing marble busts, you know? And I think that it's the same trend we're seeing with writing, with films, with all that kind of stuff. And I think there's a world where you're like, oh, that's bad. Like we want, you know, handmade sculptures to exist or handmade carved objects to exist. And I think that that's totally true. I just think in a world where this robot exists, you can buy one robot made when your show hits 100,000 subscribers, which you wouldn't have been able to do.
Wouldn't have been able to do otherwise.
Exactly. Like, and human-made sculptures are still going to be more valuable. Like people care about things that humans make.
Yeah.
So I think probably expands the market for sculptures rather than contracts it.
Also, I could not have told you how much a sculpture actually costs. But if $6,000 is 85% cheaper than handmade, like bust sculpture of a human, like that's, sculptures turns out really expensive. Who knew?
Yeah, who knew?
I should have, but no, just no idea.
It's fun to live in a world where I could afford a marble bust of my own head. I just like that.
Yeah, like if people were to ask us why we're optimists on this stuff, like this is a great example where it's like, I don't know that I need this, but it's fun that that's a possibility now in a way that just wasn't possible before.
Totally. And I think that that is also the fact that creative work is less expensive to produce. There's an underappreciated aspect of that, which I've found in a lot of people I've interviewed. So for example, I interviewed a filmmaker. His name is Dave Clark. He's amazing. And he's like a traditional Hollywood guy. He hasn't made any like huge blockbusters or anything, but he's been working in Hollywood, making commercials and short films and all this kind of stuff for a long time. And he started making AI movies. And I was asking him like what the benefit of making an AI movie is. And he was like, well, if I have an idea for a movie, I can just make it. Yeah. I don't have to get it funded. I don't have to convince anyone. And he's done that where he's made movies that no one would have wanted to fund. They've gone viral on the internet. And then he gets meetings with the Hollywood producers to be like, okay, maybe we could fund this thing. And so it creates this world where anyone can like make something to prove that the idea is good without having to like ask for money or without having to have years and years of experience. And I think that is like super cool and a super underappreciated benefit of like lowering the cost of producing this type of work.
Your whole point here is like the cost to prototype or test is approaching zero.
Yeah.
Right. And if that's the case, then you get more ideas out there, which is awesome. And then basically of those ideas that go out there, we can actually fund and pick the best ones. And we're likely going to end up with a better overall quality of ideas because we just have a bigger pool to choose from, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. 100%.
We'll be right back. But before, let me tell you about another podcast I love. Nudge, hosted by Phil Agnew, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. Ever noticed how the smallest changes can have the biggest impact? On Nudge, you learn simple evidence-backed tips to help you kick bad habits, get a raise, grow a business. Every bite-sized 20-minute show comes packed with practical advice. Nudge is fast-paced, but is still insightful with real-world examples that you can apply. Oh, and it's the UK's fastest-growing business podcast. If you want an MBA's worth of insight in one podcast, this is the right show for you. Entrepreneurs will love the show because it's filled with repeatable, proven studies, not hearsay and one-off success stories. You're going to love the show because I was interviewed by Phil. You can go check out my episode. And I recently listened to an awesome episode. It's called Six Scientifically Proven Persuasion Techniques. It's a must listen for anyone in marketing. Listen to Nudge wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, you host a podcast all about how to use ChatGPT. If we didn't do a real segment of this show to get like the best 5, 10 ChatGPT tips, people would be really angry with me. So I got to go there. You've had a whole host of guests on. You've done the over-the-shoulder thing. Like, what is the masterclass of ChatGPT?
Wow. It's going to be a little hard to do all of what you need to learn in 10 minutes, but I think we can do a lot.
We can do a handful that I think will help illustrate what's actually possible for folks.
I mean, honestly, like I would start with the basics, right? So one basic thing that people tend to not do is they don't press redo. So you should be pressing redo whenever you do a prompt and like just go through the space of possibilities. Cause like the first response that you get from it, it's only like one response and it's going to be like statistically, it's going to like produce new things. And so sort of traveling the space of possibilities, I think is like really important. And people feel like bad about doing that or they don't even realize it's a thing, but I think it's a really, really important part of prompting. I would say like prompting ChatGPT, you want to start really simple. You want to add complexity over time. So you don't want to go and be like, okay, like I want to turn my tweet into a novel and I'm just going to put the tweet in there and then I'm going to like write a whole long prompt about exactly how to do that and then I'm going to press enter because you're just going to get a bad result, right? You want to like start with a very, very simple, quick and dirty thing as quickly as you can to see the result that you're going to get from ChatGPT. You want to press redo a couple times to like sort of travel its space of possibilities. And then what you can do is you can refine. So you can go back and press edit, which people very rarely do, and try again with a slightly updated version of your prompt, giving it some more detail.
So instead of a follow-up prompt, you're saying like, go back and make that original prompt different.
Exactly.
Nobody I know does that. Yeah. Literally no one I know.
Like you can add more details. You can be like, if you notice it making a particular kind of mistake, you can start to like add something, add a rule into the prompt being like, I don't want you to do it this way. I want you to do it this way. Right. Another thing to do is aside from adding rules is giving it examples of what good looks like. So those are specifically like input output examples. So if I want it to take a podcast and turn it into a tweet or take an article and turn it into a headline, what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a bunch of examples that look like the thing I want it to do. So I'll get articles and those headlines and I'll put those into the prompt and do it like one at a time. Like don't put 50 because doing it one at a time, you can see what changes and you can start to learn like what's working, what's useful, what's not. So giving it examples, giving it rules for what to do and not do, doing it incrementally, hitting redo, pressing edit, all those things are like sort of like the first step to like really good ChatGPT usage.
All right. Once you've figured out the basics, like what should people actually be using ChatGPT for? The majority of people that I talk to, they're like, oh, cool. Yeah. I've used ChatGPT, but I don't really use it on an ongoing basis. I've tried it. Like, it's fine. It's pretty good. And you obviously, and a lot of the people you interview on your show have had a different experience than that. So like, what are the other things that people should like maybe try to do every day for a week to like really understand the value there?
That's a good question. I think that's very contextual.
It is.
I can give some like high level things that I think are really cool that a lot of people get value out of, and I'll do that. Please. But I also think it's like, it's a super contextual thing where I would notice times in your day where you're doing something repeatedly that's like sort of rote. ChatGPT can often do that. So all the summarization thing we've been talking about. I would also notice times in your day where you're like kind of confused. You're like, I don't know how to do this thing. That's a really good thing to ask ChatGPT about. Even sometimes I think a lot of people get stuck because they're like, well, I don't even know how to ask ChatGPT for this thing. Like, I'm confused about what to say or what to ask. Asking that is enough to get started. And I think that's really, really important. And for me, like, one of the things that I think ChatGPT is most underrated for is understanding human behavior and human psychology. And that can be other humans, and it can also be yourself. So on the other humans front, ChatGPT has like incredible theory of mind. It's very good at understanding and simulating how other people think and feel. And so if you're like in interpersonal situations or you're making like high stakes decisions, feeding in the information about the different players in the situation or the emails or the text messages or whatever, it's like actually really useful for like unpacking those situations and helping you make decisions. It's very underrated. I think it's also quite good for helping you understand yourself. So, and therefore like make better decisions and achieve your goals and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I teach this course, Maximize Your Mind with ChatGPT. We think of ChatGPT as being two things. One is a really good mirror, and two is a really good mentor. So on the mirror front, it can really help teach you like, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are your psychological patterns? What are your values? All that kind of stuff, which I think is really important because, you know, I think in a lot of ways, you are not what you build what you are. And so knowing who you are is like a really, really important step to making anything in the world. And then on the like mentor front, it's just really good at, if you're in a particular situation, like helping you understand, okay, like what are my psychological blockers? How do I normally make mistakes in these situations, and how can I move through it? Or how can I stay focused on my goal? And one of the big things for me in that is ChatGPT's custom instructions feature, which basically like gives ChatGPT context on who you are. So one of the things I use it for a lot is there are certain kinds of situations that I struggle with. So I have like people pleaser personality type, and it's hard for me to say no. And I've noticed in therapy that a really good question for me to ask in a situation to try to suss out, like, am I doing this because of like people pleasing or not, is to ask myself, what would I say if I was not afraid of feeling guilty? So like removing the fear of guilt from a situation with people makes it easier for me to say no. But sometimes that's like the realization that you have, and then you just like lose it. It's like hard to remember. But I just throw it in my ChatGPT custom instructions, and I'm like, anytime I'm in an interpersonal situation, I'm making a decision, please ask me this question. And I use ChatGPT all the time for that kind of thing. And it's really good at just the right moment. It's like, by the way, what do you think you would do if you weren't feeling guilty? And I can't tell you, like, just that simple little nudge is like so helpful. So stuff like that is great.
Well, what's interesting about that that's fascinating to me is like, there's a lot of talk when it comes to AI about how we as users can prompt the AI. And what you're basically saying is like, hey, use special instructions to have the AI prompt you. And that can be just as, if not more powerful.
Yeah. 100%. And I think that that's coming more. Like, I imagine that it will be more deeply integrated into our browsers and into our operating systems and all that kind of stuff. And the opportunities for it prompting you are going to be much, much more frequent.
Okay. Before we close out today's show, we've talked a lot about AI. We've talked a lot about workflow, ChatGPT. I heard you talk about Claude earlier and how you use Claude to write summaries. Yeah. Could you give the people, give the Marketing Against the Grain listeners, your summary of kind of where the LLMs out there sit for you that you use, because it's more than just ChatGPT.
Yeah.
And kind of what you use different ones for and like what you think different models are better at, so that like if folks are like looking where to maybe go for a specific task, they can get some clarity there.
It's a great question. It's really important to know your models. It's changing all the time. So this is like a point in time.
Yes. This is a today we're recording in April of 2024. Yes.
I think for me, like ChatGPT is like my sort of go-to. It has a really, really good mobile app. It has custom instructions. It has some of these UI features like the redo button and stop generation button and the edit button that like Claude, for example, doesn't have. So I use ChatGPT like probably most often because I think it's just good enough for almost every like day-to-day task. I also use it for coding specifically. Mm. I really like ChatGPT for coding. I have a custom GPT that a friend of mine made that I think has a lot of good defaults for using it to build simple little apps. So I think it's the best coder right now. Claude is really fantastic for writing, and it also has the longest context window, or not the longest, but it has a long context window. So it's quite smart. It's really good at writing, and you can put a lot of text in it. I think you can put like 300 pages of text or something in it. I was on the phone with my lawyers before this, and we had a question about a contract, and the contract is like, I don't know, 100 pages. And they were like, we're going to go check. And I was like, no, I will just ask Claude. And I just like put it in there, and Claude answered the question, you know, and that saves a lot of time. Everyone's happy.
A lot of time.
Maybe the lawyers aren't as happy, but...
lawyers definitely wanted to bill you for that hour, but they don't get you now.
So Claude is quite good for that. Although obviously you always have to be careful. Like it can still hallucinate. It gets things wrong, all that kind of stuff. This is not legal advice. And then Google Gemini. Gemini is really cool because it has like a million and a half tokens in its context window. So it's by far the longest context window. And that's sometimes useful for like, I don't know, really crazy stuff. Like if you want to take all the journal entries you've ever written and like throw them in there and ask it questions, like you can do that.
Well, let's break that down just a little bit, so because I think not everybody's going to understand that. When we talk about context window and what we can put into prompt an AI or large language model in this case, it's kind of like the short-term memory for that model, right? It's what that model can know about you and the situation kind of in that moment. And if you have a complex task or question, you need it to know a lot. And if you don't have a very big context window, it's kind of like hard to get the depth of response that you're looking for. Is that the right way to think about it, or do you think about it differently?
Yeah, that's basically right. So the context window is what you put into the chat box plus the length of the response. Mm-hmm. And the what you put into the chat box is usually like the vast majority of the context window. Usually the responses are capped at like, I don't know, a couple hundred to a couple thousand words. So the vast majority is the prompt length. And yeah, I think it is sort of like the short-term memory for the model. That's the hard information it has about what you want it to do or what you want it to summarize or whatever.
Yes.
It has a bunch of like latent information, which is like sort of stored up from its training, which is sometimes a little bit less reliable. So if you want to ask it a question about something, you want to put as much information about that thing into the context as you can to like make sure that it does a good job. But if you have limited context, you have to decide, okay, like what's going to go in there? How do I pick which sources of information? All that kind of stuff. And that lowers the response quality, basically.
Got it. And so you're saying, back to Gemini, you're saying like Gemini has an extra long context window. So if you're doing things where you need that, that's really the use case in which you're using Gemini.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, one of the cool tricks of Gemini is it's multimodal, which means it can convert text to image, image to text, video to text, that kind of stuff. So you can like throw in a YouTube video and be like, can you annotate this? And it will like annotate the video in whatever way you want it to, or output a transcription, or tell you for each scene in the video, what was on the wall behind the person who was in the scene. It will do stuff like that, which is kind of crazy. I've not found like very many day-to-day uses for it, mm-hmm. but I think they're out there.
Very cool. All right. We covered all types of ground, Dan. I really appreciate you joining us today on Marketing Against the Grain. Before we go, is there anything else that you feel like we didn't cover that we need to hit, or do you feel like we hit it all today?
I think we hit most of it, but I really do want to sort of like underscore the thing that we started with at the beginning is like how important a spirit of like exploration and curiosity is to these things.
Oh, yeah.
And how kind of, how just like cool it is that I can go and like make an app in like an hour that would have taken me days. And like people who couldn't make apps at all are making them. Like I have someone on my team, he's not technical at all. And he built an app for us that we use internally in like 2 days. He has no idea how it works, but he just built it with ChatGPT because he knew what he wanted and he had enough kind of like stick-to-itiveness to do it. And I think we're just in this incredible time where if you have enough curiosity, you have like an exploratory spirit, you can make any kind of creative work that you want to make. And I think that that is like so awesome. So I hope that the people who are listening to this just, you know, take some time to try it out because it's really worth it.
Set some goals for yourself of things you want to learn, or like, hey, I want to do, you know, one thing with ChatGPT every day, what have you. And then kind of your other point is like, if you have a clear goal, kind of grind it out, work with it, iterate on it till you actually get what you're looking for, because that is like the aha moment of like, oh, this is actually possible.
Yeah.
And if you expect like to just put in a few sentences and get the perfect thing, that's not what's going to happen.
100%. I think it's really important to remember that what you put in is what you get out.
Yes.
And so if you're putting good stuff in, you're going to get good results. And also, these things are changing very fast. Like what's possible now was not possible a couple months ago. And so I think that there's this tendency to have a little bit of capability blindness where you're like, I tried that before and it didn't work. And so as new models come out, like keep trying things, because in a year or two, some of the things that were totally impossible are going to be possible. And I think that's really, really important to like to know and stay on top of.
I love that. And it's like, you can even just set a reminder like, hey, once a month, I want to try this thing. Yeah. And it's eventually going to be possible, right? And even if it's years before it's possible, it gets you out of the mindset that like, oh, this technology can't do what I want, or I don't need to pay attention to it yet. It gets you in that exploratory mindset, which I think has been one of the core themes of the show today. And I deeply appreciate that from you, Dan. And thanks so much for joining us on Marketing Integrated. It's been a blast.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome. I really appreciate it.